This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Whatley on KLZ 560.
Welcome to Legal Talk. My name is Scott Whatley. Glad to have Kevin Flesh in studio, Flesh and Beck Law. Interesting times are all around us all, no matter what your business may be or, you know, your vocation. I'm telling you, it is weird times out there. And with that, not much of an introduction for being weird times, Kevin, but my stars. I told somebody today, if I'd have had $1 million, I'd have lost it 6 weeks ago if you'd have told me we'd be here today.
Yep.
I would have never thought.
It's a really interesting place, and it's a really interesting time for us to, you know, the time with family and the time to be home has been good. You know, the governor yesterday, obviously with the stay-at-home order this week or last week, and then the governor amended it so that at first I wasn't sure whether or not our business could be open. We've got part of our business relating to the criminal defense stuff that I've got contracts with cities, so we're still in the jails doing advisements, and it's been very interesting dealing with all of the different municipal courts. But then the other side of our practice, the personal injury side of the practice, has been also very interesting because folks haven't been really doing any medical treatment because a lot of the medical facilities are closed and they're kind of waiting to see what happens. And but those are really important things for people to be doing, sure, as making sure that they're taking care of themselves, because you want to be as healthy as possible if you got this virus. But secondarily, whether or not we could be open. And the governor changed and specifically included lawyers as critical businesses, which, of course, being myopic, we always thought we were, it is very interesting in these times. But I've got to tell you, there was a period of time when we first found out about all of this several weeks ago, where you kind of go into a bunker mode where you're like, oh my gosh, you know, the world is completely ending and the sky is falling, and you have to get through that. And I think we in our practice and just fundamentally myself have kind of gone through that. And then you just start looking at what exactly is going on. And that's kind of where I'm at, and saying, you know what, this isn't forever. And this is certainly something temporarily that is really difficult for people. But luckily for us, we've got really good clients. We've got work that we're doing. We've got good work that we're helping people with. I settled a case yesterday for a fellow that's out of work right now. We're going to put a substantial amount of money in his pocket because of his personal injury case, and it's going to get him through.
Sure.
And so it's those sorts of situations that we're really, again, we talk about it all the time, about adding value and about doing the things that we need to do to help people get themselves back in place. Well, this is one of those times, and I want to tell all of the listeners that our firm is open, our firm is available for any sort of legal matter. But not only that, but I think it's really important for everybody to recognize that you have every ability to decide on what your day is going to look like. And we all know we have certain requirements that we've got to do, the social distancing, all of the things we've got to do to make sure everybody is safe and that we protect the elderly, we protect the folks that have the issues with any sort of lung capacity or any issues with what this virus really gets to, the people that are most susceptible. We've got to keep those people protected. My mom's in a nursing home. She's been in a nursing home for several years, and I haven't been able to see her for several weeks because of this. And, you know, emotionally, it's really affecting her because I see her every week. Sure. And she
depends on
her. Yeah, and she depends on seeing me, and it's something that she looks forward to, and she's not able to do it. So if people can do whatever they can to help those shut-ins that really do have issues, I would suggest it. But secondarily, take care of yourself and start putting together a plan as to how exactly you're going to get through this. And so we've got a plan in place. The firm is doing well. I've got, it seems, half of my employees. I had one employee that seemed to, their spouse may have been positive, so she immediately went into quarantine and stayed at her house. And she had a whole setup, computer setup, so we've been able to figure things out for her. And she's been working at home and actually has been relatively efficient at what she's doing and getting things accomplished. So I think there are ways for us to get through this. And much like any other difficult time that we've had in our society, it's getting to a point where you say, okay, enough is enough. Mm-hmm. We've got to figure out what it's going to work for us, and then you figure out a plan, and you move forward, and you follow that plan. And that's what we're doing. So, you know, it's having the ability to come in and talk with you. I mean, and let shed some light on the fact that there are people still out there working, and there's still stuff that can be done, and we can help people in their times of need. So you can pick up the phone. I've been doing Zoom conferences, which has been really interesting with folks.
If we'd have been this 20, 25 years ago,
it would have been devastating. Right. Yeah. Because you don't have, but we have some of the technology we have right now. I've been doing visits with inmates at Arapahoe in Denver County through this service called Securus. And I know Securus has been around a while, but I haven't really used it because normally I would just go into the jail and meet with them. But now I'm able to do it. I've got it all set up, and I've been having meetings with them via on my cell phone, on my smartphone, with doing video back and forth and having chats. And it's really been helping them, because you talk about populations that really don't know what's going on. It's the folks that are in custody. Because just to tell you right now, the courts have essentially shut down almost all of their functions. They're still doing some things remotely, and the judges are still taking up certain matters. Permanent restraining order hearings, initial advisements. I was in court 2 days ago in Denver in 2300. I was the only lawyer there. Everything else, even the public defender and the DAs were there via Zoom in the courtroom. They had a big screen up, so there was a split screen with the prosecutor and the district attorney,
wow.
or the district attorney and the public defender. And then the judge was there live, and the inmates are there live, but they're behind glass. So had no physical contact with my client. Could talk with them over the phone in the courtroom. But really interesting. So people are beginning to figure it out. I had a phone conference with a court in Judge Volley in Division 206 in Arapahoe yesterday. He had 16 cases that were coming up for jury trials, and the courts aren't doing any jury trials for sure until the middle of May. And so we were having a discussion, a big group discussion. We all called in, so there were 40 lawyers on the phone, and he just went through case by case as if we were doing a docket electronically, figuring out what we were going to do. And it wasn't, I got to tell you, it really wasn't that much different than being in the courtroom.
Really? Yeah.
You know, nobody was talking, because only the people that had to deal with the case that the court was calling at the time. But you could have a regular conversation with folks about what was going on, try to figure out what you were going to do next, give a status on where your case was, and move it along. Mm-hmm. So I think there's going to be a point in time, and my guess is it's going to be maybe the end of April, where we're going to start seeing still the social distancing, probably not as much in-person contact with the courts and things like that, but I think there's going to be a lot more of the virtual courtroom setup. Denver's doing that next week, and there's going to be business that's going to be done.
Right.
And I think that's what we all need to see.
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's like this radio program. It's like the media. That there's a reason that people need to know what's going on, but they also need to hear about what people are thinking about and doing to help them along so that they can move forward.
Right. You know, and I wouldn't want any of the job of the officials that have had to come out, whether it be the mayor, the governor, the president, or whatever. But I think what threw everything into such a panic, we just had news conference after news conference after news conference. We went from zero to 100,
yes,
so to speak, you know, with, hey, do this. And I think that just what threw everybody in a panic, don't you?
I do. And I think that that's really hard, especially for the folks that are most vulnerable in this situation. I was talking to my dad. You know, he's in his mid-70s. He's had some significant health issues. He's sitting on the couch watching TV, and he's watching all of the different news programs, and he's got to get away from it.
Yeah.
And the issue is that if that's all you're consumed by all day long, it's exactly the wrong place to be, because there is hope here. But I would agree with you. I mean, we'll be able to argue about how our elected officials have handled this, and non-elected officials, right? The Tri-County health people,
yep,
and everything else of what's gone on. I think they're trying to react to that upward curve that they're really concerned about and causing some real problems in our medical facilities. And I completely understand where that's coming from. I also can hear what the president is saying about, we've got to get people back, and we've got to get off of this message because it is frightening people. And I've seen it in my practice with employees where, you know, initially with the stay-at-home orders in Denver and then the statewide orders, everybody's like, oh, my gosh, you know, what are we to do and how can we get through this? And people are really worried about, well, the business that I'm working for, is it essential? Is it not essential?
I know, because that is confusing to people. You know, I mean, when you look out at all the things that they said were essential, I mean, it was page after page after page. And then how bad does that make you feel?
When you're not.
For you're not to be essential.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We were sort of joking in the office about the old Eagles song about basically money. Lawyers and drugs seem to be the essential services that were available initially. Well, it could be a whole nother show, I guess, about what's important. But we saw what happened in Denver when
the minute the mayor said that at 2 o'clock, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, the lines at the marijuana shops and the liquor stores. And then at 5 o'clock, he came back and made that exception.
And and I think he needed to because of what was going on. And you know, it is an interesting time, and it does really give you the ability to reflect on what's going on in your life and how things are going. So I think all of these things, it's going to make us stronger in the end.
Yeah.
And I think that it's going to be of benefit. You got to take the positive out of it, because otherwise there's sure. nothing else that you've got to have some hope at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
And you're right. I mean, everything that we've been hearing over the last several weeks is, oh, my gosh, it's coming, it's coming. Well, it's here.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? We're able to get through it. I did a little bit of research in my off time, and early on in this process, when we were at, I think, 10 or 11 deaths in Colorado for the year relating to COVID-19, we had had 91 deaths in auto accidents during that same time period. And we're not telling people to stop driving. So, I mean, it's one of those things that we're going to be able to manage. The trouble is that we're not sure right now how exactly that management is happening, but we're seeing some good things in Washington. The state of Washington, because they spiked and then they went through this process and they seem to be getting better. And I think our politicians hopefully have to come out with rhetoric relating to, okay, we're seeing positive strides here, and these are the things we have to work on. Because otherwise, you also look at the map, the places to go, North Dakota, South Dakota, right? Parts of Wyoming.
Which you and I would be good with.
Yes, yeah. I know. Turkey season's coming up, exactly. Maybe the spring turkey season. We need to start traveling a little bit to those other places. I mean, it is definitely one of those things where you look at the hot spots are the urban centers.
Mm-hmm.
And so if people are really looking at self-help things to do, it's stay in your home or travel to some of these other places and quarantine yourself there. Because
sure.
if you can find something that you like to do in those other places that aren't populated, that seems to work too.
Yep.
I mean, because they're not getting the cases. They just aren't. And so you feel bad for the urban centers, New York and the other
sure.
places. I mean, those are difficult places to be, because not only do you have the politicians coming out every day and saying, oh, my gosh, we don't have enough respirators. And, oh, my gosh, we don't have all of these things. You're walking around. I mean, I saw it 2 weeks ago going into King Soopers at 7 a.m. on a Sunday. There are people standing in a line. You get in one line. And then you got to go to the toilet paper line to get your toilet paper.
And that is something still I've never understood through all this,
right?
Is the toilet paper issue.
So
some people just said it's just that comfort that everybody needs.
I think it's a really interesting study of human nature, because what I've heard and read about in this process is, and I've seen it in my own life, is you get into these situations that seem to be completely out of control. And you try to control whatever you can.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of us, making sure you have enough toilet paper, right? Making sure you have the basic. I mean, we tried to get flour this week. One of my daughters who's been at home, you know, because school's out and we're supposed to be home if you're not working, decided that she was going to learn how to bake bread. And we went to the store and we didn't have any yeast in the house. So there wasn't any yeast at the store and there wasn't any flour. So, I mean, it's all of those sorts of things that people are stocking up on. And I've also heard that the supply channels aren't impeded in any way.
Right.
It's not like we don't have the same amount of food and things that are out there. It's just people are buying it in more mm-hmm. volume.
Yeah.
Because they're not sure if they're going to be able to get to the store again. So I think all of these things are going to level out. And, you know, it's going to take it's such an interesting process for us, because we've gotten to, you think about the span in which the Dow Jones crashed,
right?
Less than a week, 10 days,
sure.
and then sort of come back. Our society is so much, we want everything now, and we expect everything to happen right away. Mm-hmm. And this, as I think, I don't remember who the medical physician was, It may have been somebody from the CDC, but this virus doesn't have that timetable.
Right.
We don't get to decide that I think we'll be able to decide on how we live our lives to some degree, but this virus has its own longevity and its mm-hmm. own time period that it lives. And so it's not a Facebook or Snapchat generation virus. So I think that's going to be interesting to see, but it definitely is one of those things that I've even noticed in my life where you just got to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing we can do about it.
Nothing we can do. Absolutely.
And then slowing down isn't bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it really isn't. I mean, you know, after a while, guys like me and you, they're used to getting out outdoors. I mean, kind of go crazy a little bit. But you know what? I think there are going to be a lot of things that good come from this. And, you know, one thing you mentioned about business real quick, then we'll get to a couple of things with the firm. But they said you may find out some of your workers are more efficient at home.
Yeah. No, no doubt.
Than coming into an office. And they said this may change a lot of business structure to let people work at home.
And I've already noticed, I had a settlement conference this week that we did electronically through a Zoom process. And we all got together in a Zoom conference call to begin with. And then the mediator who's done this before separated us into two separate electronic conference rooms, essentially.
Oh,
and
okay.
So we didn't hear the other side. And it was just like a regular settlement conference. So normal settlement conferences, half the time we start everybody together in the room, and then otherwise you separate and you're in two different conference rooms, and they put you apart so that you can't hear the other people talking in their conference room. And then the mediator goes back and forth. Well, we did it electronically. And it actually was more efficient, because when you're together, you're focused on exactly what you're trying to accomplish versus just sort of chitty-chatting.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had sort of a compressed schedule because everybody's time, we just had other things going on. And so what I found is that we got to the heart of the matter, there was less dickering back and forth about things, and we got it resolved. And it was a case that I thought we were going to have some trouble resolving. And we did it electronically, and it was really impressive. And the other lawyer on the other side had never done one of these before either. And he said at the end of it, I didn't have much hope. This really gives me some hope about where we're going.
Cool.
And same thing with, I thought we would have some opportunity to resolve it. I didn't know, though. And it was a positive experience. But the mediator knew what she was doing as well. So I've got another one next week where I don't know if the mediator is going to know as well how to handle the electronic aspect
sure.
of it.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm finding, too, is it's making us better and stronger in the sense of being able to figure out how, well, we can't do it. I can't go to the jail and see the person because the jails aren't allowing anybody in. Mm-hmm. And I have a client that is emotionally really upset about what the situation is because they're sitting there and they don't know when they're going to get into court next.
Right.
What do I do? How do I service that client to make them feel better?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the things we're learning about.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. I'm finding out, you know, for example, in our server for our firm, we've always had a back door where you could get in and get into our server with passcodes and everything, get through the firewall. How do multiple people do that so that we can be working remotely? And it's probably something I should have known how to do before.
But we've never had to think about it.
For snow days,
yeah.
You know, or for those situations where the office just, we can't get to the office for whatever mm-hmm. reason. And we have the capability, but we've never learned how to do it. And we have the time now.
Yep.
And we have the ability to figure that out because it's something we have to do. Because I'm not willing to sit at home for a month and a half and not pay employees.
Sure.
And that's really, as a business owner.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge burden. I mean,
it's huge. I got 10, 11, 12 people that are expecting some sort of paycheck. And if we don't have money coming into the firm to pay,
right,
they're out.
Right.
And we saw it last week.
Oh.
3.3 million people with new unemployment claims.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, there's lots of folks out there that you can. I mean, my daughter started working at a dry cleaner in Greenwood Village, and the dry cleaner just doesn't have the work that they do, and so they're like, you know, don't come in. It's not a big deal. She's 16.
Right,
but
right.
But it's also a lesson for her to realize, oh, you know, this is mm-hmm. this is serious in the sense that even my job is expendable in these situations. Now, hopefully we can get everything spun back up
sure.
again. But it's going to take months.
I mean, I really, you know, and the president came on the other day and said something, you know, hopefully by Easter, and I mean, you know, I certainly support the President Trump, but I wish he kind of ended this because I think a lot of people are going to expect that. And I just don't see that happening quick.
I agree with you, but at the same time, somebody needs to
give a little hope.
Yeah.
Too, that was cool. And that part I did like.
Right. And say, you know what? This isn't forever.
Yeah.
Because people need to hear that message too. And I think I see it in jury trials all the time, the perception of what you get a bunch of people in a room and you start talking about something, and the level of emotion of that room really depends on the people in the room. And I think that's really important for us to remember in our leadership right now. If you hear a person that's gloom and doom for months, well, that's what we're going to end up with.
Yep, yeah.
And so I agree with you. I think I think he's probably a little ahead of the curve in the sense of how long it's going to take. Right. But at the same time,
I'm telling you, I'm glad he's running
right.
it.
I'm glad that there's a tip of the spear that's there saying, I hear the person that's in the food service industry or in restaurants and bars that are completely out of it, and they're going to be out of it for 2 months at least, and they need some help. We need to get people back in the economy. And so we got to figure out how that happens, because it's not following all of what the health providers are saying, because if they do that, we're going to shut down the country for 6 months. And that's not going to work either.
Yeah, not at all.
And that's the balance.
Yeah.
But that's a good discussion to have. And it's I think it's interesting on one hand, like you said, and like we talked at the beginning of the show, the pause has been of benefit if you take advantage of it. If you just sit at home and binge watch Netflix, it's and I think there was a lot of that was done.
Probably, yeah. And you wonder just what the weekends will bring, if people are going to go up to the mountains or, you know, try to get out and do a bunch of stuff, which I highly recommend you doing, you know, just, again, practicing all the things that we've heard we should be doing.
Right.
I think it could be a little crazy out the mountains.
You know, it's been interesting. I've been watching Summit since we have a place up in Copper Mountain, and been watching what the folks at Summit in Summit County have been saying, you know, getting out in the backcountry and doing stuff because we still have good snow is a little bit strenuous and tenuous for that county as well, because they still are worried about people now getting hurt, you know, doing those activities and affecting their resources for the people that they may need to help with the COVID. So it's a delicate balance, I think, that you've got to tread there, but people still need to get out and do things that they enjoy doing.
Sure.
And I think that's going to be beneficial for everyone.
Right.
And I think everybody is, you know, that's the great thing about the freedoms and the liberties that we have in this country, is that you, as long as you understand sort of the rules within our society as to what to do with regard to those, I think most people can take care of themselves pretty well and try to manage that. And that's going to be the next interesting exercise after we get through this, is what our America looks like.
Yeah, for sure. Again, you're listening to Legal Talk with Kevin Flesch. Kevin's number 303-806-8886, Flesch and Beck Law. FleschLawFirm.com. That's FLESCH LawFirm.com. So let me ask you this. When let's say now we get into an accident. You know, there's been a lot of reports police aren't doing certain things.
Yep.
Are auto accidents still under the deal where, you know, you should call?
Yes. Okay. I still would recommend calling. Now, they may tell you if there's no, I'll call it sort of bleeding going on, significant injury where you don't need an ambulance, they're probably going to have you do a counter report, and we're probably going to be sort of in the schedule like they would if you had a big snowstorm or something else, where you have a weather event where they say, you know, collect the information, and it's the same old thing that we talk about.
Right.
Make sure that you find out who the driver's real identity is, get their insurance, take a photograph of their license plate, photograph of the VIN, get any photographs that you can of the damage to the vehicles, and then make every effort to have a police officer come out, stay in your car, social distance, all of that stuff.
Sure.
But if you're not significantly hurt at that moment, you'll probably have to do a counter report.
Mm-hmm.
And then make sure that you get in contact with your insurance right away so that they can do their investigation. And interestingly enough, we have our personal injury side of the practice. A lot of the claim reps are working at home remotely and doing a pretty good job of being in contact, and we were still doing a fair amount of that work where we're able to get cases resolved. Like I said, I resolved a case yesterday. I've got several other cases in the works that I think we're going to be able to resolve prior to filing suit. Mm-hmm. And even the litigation, we are moving forward, and a lot of the big defense firms, their associates are at home, and they're able to take care of things. We're able to make sure we get things resolved pretty quickly. So if you get into that situation where you have an accident, I would definitely try to get the police officer out there. And if not, then do everything you can to get a counter report done right away so that there's some documentation for it.
Absolutely. And I tell you, I did see one report on the news. Because of traffic being less, people are driving faster.
Yeah.
They showed
I noticed that yesterday, too.
A guy got clocked at 99, and another guy got clocked at 91, you know, and a 70,
yep.
You know, and a 65.
Yeah.
Because before
no
you
traffic.
Know it, there's no traffic. And, you know, in our vehicles now, get after it.
They move.
Boy, you don't even realize that they're so smooth. So that's another thing just to watch is your speed. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, driving around to court appearances this week, I noticed a Denver motorcycle cop when we had a nice day of weather was on an on-ramp with his radar, with his laser. And so I was like, oh, well, it looks like they still need to get traffic. And you want to control speed, obviously, but I was surprised that there was an officer doing that.
But
he was, and luckily I had my speed down because that's one off-ramp that I sometimes do pick up a little right. speed on. But I was fine. I didn't get the ticket, so that was good. But they're out there, and yeah. But absolutely, I mean, traffic, it's like 1999 traffic right now with our roadways. And so for those of us that are out on the road, it's nice, but still be careful.
Sure.
It's the same old thing.
And we talked about this a few weeks ago, too, but, I mean, motorcycles are now going to be more out.
Yes.
And so, you know, be very careful, one, if you're the operator of a motorcycle, and then, two, hey, in our vehicle, just, you know, pay attention to what's going on.
Absolutely. The motorcycles, especially, we're getting into that real springtime weather. And with people being able to not be at work, there's going to be lots of folks out riding their motorcycle because it's a really good stress reliever, mm-hmm. reliever for those individuals. And just be careful out there for those folks. Give them plenty of room and make sure that you know where they're at all times.
Right. Once again, Kevin's number, 303-806-8886. And as he said, hey, they're open. They're ready to help you. And maybe you've been dealing with a case on your own. We have covered that a number of times, but just to mention it real briefly, you know, Kevin will take a free consultation with you and offer that to you. And that can be by phone, of course, or in the office. But that is something, as he mentioned earlier, adding value. So, you know, if you've got something you're working through, any legal matter whatsoever, I hope you'll give Kevin's office a call, 303-806-8886. So real quick, you mentioned the medical treatment and those aren't able to get in right now. So surely that won't be held against them when you go to settle a case and you go, hey, look, they couldn't get in
right.
to a doctor
no,
for 60
it,
days.
No, it yeah. won't be, but they're going to have to document their efforts in trying to do something. A lot of the urgent cares and other places are still open, and I would mm-hmm. suggest staying away from the emergency rooms. You know, if you've got, I'll call it just sort of your standard variety rear-ender where you get whiplash and some of your normal soft tissue injury. There's a lot of physical therapists and chiropractic treatments and other right. folks out there that are open, that are more than happy to have you come in. They are under the critical businesses. They're open, and they're ready to do things for you, and they're taking all the protocols to make sure that their facilities have been cleaned and everything's good. We're doing the same thing. It's certainly one of those things that you need to be diligent about it and just make sure that you get things taken care of. Because I don't want a year from now, yep. our memory isn't very good,
okay.
Right? And a year from now, the claim rep being, you know, not remembering this time period and giving us a hard time about it. So whatever people can do to get in and document their injuries, they're doing telemedicine
yep.
now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing, like I said, a bunch of that sort of video conferencing. And it's surprisingly pretty good. I mean, I'd like to have people in my conference room,
sure.
but I also understand why right now it's really smart not to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Kevin, great information. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Legal Talk with Kevin Flesch. Kevin's number, 303-806-8886. Thanks for being with us. Got a road trip planned for getting ready for your next outdoor adventure? Hi, this is Scott Watley for my friends at D&D Tire Service. At D&D Tire Service in Parker and Aurora, they understand automotive issues can be a headache, and they never come at a convenient time. D&D Tire Service is family-owned and operated and is truly your one-stop shop for all of your automotive needs. All tires are reduced, and for a limited time, there are some great rebates saving you up to $200. From belts to tires, wiper blades, oil changes, D&D Tire Service has you covered. For the location nearest to you, call 303-699-7337. That's 303-699-7337. D&D Tire Service is the official auto repair shop of Sportsman of Colorado Radio. Let D&D Tire Service keep you and your family safe on the roads. D&DTireService.com.
Glen Lyle Chevrolet is considered an essential business, and they'll remain open for service parts and body work from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, and they're following all the CDC recommendations. Glen Lyle Chevrolet wants you to stay safe and will resume sales soon.
Knowledge in Reverse is brought to you by Steve Hurley with Affordable Interest Mortgage.
Wondering if a reverse mortgage is the right decision for you? Get those questions answered. Getting the truth allows you to make the right decision. Let's schedule some time. Your home, our office, or just for coffee. This type of mortgage is not for everyone. Call Steve at 303-885-0254, home of Knowledge in Reverse. That's 303-885-2054. Learn the truth. NMLS 243-200, regulated by DORA, equal opportunity lender.
David R. Cishon, certified estate planner and registered financial consultant, specializes in working with people who are planning for retirement and retired clients who want to preserve and grow their assets.
Education is the greatest equalizer is my theme. It's always been. More people know, the better their decisions are, the more comfortable they become. So when people come in, we take, some people say, an excessive amount of time learning about the client themselves, who they are, what are their feelings. I don't care how much assets they have. If their assets are important to them, that's critical to me.
Call now for your free consultation with David Cishon of Householder Group. 720-482-1917. That's 720-482-1917. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Householder Group Estate and Retirement Specialist, LLC, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Denver's Afternoon Rush. Rush to Reason is coming up at 3. Now, back to Haystack Help Radio.
Welcome to Legal Talk. My name is Scott Watley, and we are glad to have Kevin Flesh in studio, Flesh and Beck Law. Their number, 303-806-8886. FleshLawFirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H LawFirm.com. And with that, we will welcome Mr. Flesh. How are you, sir?
I'm good.
Good to see you.
Yeah, you too.
6 feet away. Good to exactly. See you 6 feet away.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, at the time we are...
Most people really don't want to be in a room with me anyway, yeah. So it's been working out quite well.
Yeah. Well, at the time we were doing the show here, we are under a current lockdown here in our state, and a stay-at-home order, I guess I should say, and... So, Kevin, just your general thoughts, just as a citizen, as a business owner, man, did you ever think it would come to this a month ago?
I didn't have any sort of expectation that we would be in the place that we were or we are. It has been really interesting. As a business owner, it's been somewhat stressful. I'm not going to lie about that, that there's been lots going on and a lot of things. Just running a small business, it's been an interesting time for us. I think we're through that. I mean, it's still going to be a struggle, but I think we're going to get to a point where things will sort of normalize over the next couple of months. And I think it's going to take 2 or 3 or 4 months to really get us back in play and figure that out. From the standpoint of what we do as a lawyer, it's been interesting because the dynamics have been different with regard to the lack of personal appearances and the inability to get in front of a judge to get things done. That's been somewhat frustrating at times. But at the same time, I understand why we have needed to do it and the extreme precautions they have taken in the different courthouses around the state. So I get all of that, and I understand why as a system we've had to do it. I think that they've been good about trying to balance sort of our constitutional rights and what we're entitled to as citizens versus what the system has done. It's going to be interesting how this all plays out in the criminal context with regard to how does your right to a speedy trial, so being tried within 6 months, how is it affected with this sort of systemic problem, and what should happen with regard to that? I have a real fondness, I'll say, for the individuals who have been sitting in custody waiting to get to their trial date, and the fact that those individuals should not be impacted by anything, that I think the constitutionality of their right to a speedy trial shouldn't be impeded. I have a feeling that the system is going to toll for a period of time, probably based upon the governor's emergency order, that time period that things are figured out. Because the system, quite frankly, you know, we've been worried all along during this process about the fact that our health system can't handle the amount of people that potentially were affected by this virus, and that because of that, people would die because of the lack of the medical treatment. I think that we're finding that, what we've done so far, right. I think we're going to be okay, except for significant issues probably in New York and other urban centers that we now understand just the transmission of individuals with this virus is where the hot button areas are. But I think we're also going to be running into the same thing in July and August and September in our criminal justice system, where we don't have enough judges for the amount of cases that are going to be sort of teed up and ready to go, and defendants saying, my right to a speedy trial, there's no right for you to say that it has to be told just because this has happened,
right?
That we should have been able to figure things out. But we'll just have to see if we can get 50 jurors in a room to pick a jury, because that's really the issue, right? Mm-hmm. Is that during this time period, I've probably had to move 10 or 12, maybe even 15 trials during this time period that we would have had teed up otherwise,
right,
and ready to go. And, you know, probably half of them would have figured something out, and we would have resolved them, but half of them wouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the criminal side of the practice. So what I see with our justice system over the rest of this year probably is they're going to have to get through all those, because the primary individuals for what I believe our justice system needs to deal with right now are the criminal cases. Civil cases relating to money and that sort of thing, still important.
Sure.
You know, it's still important for permanent restraining order hearings, temporary restraining order hearings, replevin actions, anything, any equitable relief that needs to be done right away. Those cases will be heard just like they normally would be. But the secondary then issues are going to be relating to criminal defendants and their right to a trial in that time period. And it's different time periods, right? Because we've got 6 months for felonies. We've got municipal courts that are 91 days. We've got 6 months for most county court matters. So all of those cases have got to get through the system, and the system is going to break down a little bit. So
right,
we'll see what happens. But what does that mean? It means that maybe there's some defendants that get their cases dismissed that shouldn't have.
Because
we'll
they
see.
Did release
yeah.
a lot of, because aren't the jails, I mean, pretty full?
Yeah, they're pretty full. I mean, Jefferson County, we've been watching all of the things relating to the Jefferson County Sheriff complaining about his budget issues with mm-hmm. their county commissioners, and he's been letting people out over time. And he's reduced his jail population by a considerable percentage because of what it costs him to run the jail. So they are going to have, probably by the time we're almost done with this whole process, they'll have a floor or a floor and a half of that jail that will be empty, that there will be no inmates in.
Wow.
At the same time, we'll just have to see how this whole thing goes, and whether or not that's a space for Department of Corrections to use for housing new inmates in the Department of Corrections, and they pay that sheriff so much per day to house individuals,
mm-hmm.
so we can figure that out. So they may have some capacity there that may, in the long run, be of benefit. But yeah, there's definitely, he's been releasing individuals that meet certain criteria, and you can see what those criteria are, and the public has a right to look at exactly the inmates that they're releasing. They're not, you know, they're not going to be individuals that are,
right,
generally speaking, high risk. They're not going to be individuals that have a particular type of sentence. They'll be individuals that are almost finishing their sentence and have been model citizens while in the jail as well, and there's some criteria relating to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, quite frankly, I think the sheriff has done a really nice job in Jefferson County with his limited resources, and also sending a message to the citizens of Jefferson County about, listen, if depending upon what you want your jail to be, you either have to figure out a way politically to get more money into the system, or this is how we're going to operate.
Right.
And so I know it's been frustrating for the courts in Jefferson County, for the judges that have sentenced individuals to a certain type of time period, thinking that that's what the person needs to be rehabilitated or punished, depending upon the circumstance.
Right.
And then the sheriff can come in after that sentence has been entered and change the sentence in the sense of how the inmate is being held. So there's lots of different options for that inmate than regular jail, in-home detention, some other sort of inmate-outmate program.
And you may probably, which is good for your client and good for you, can see a lot more of these probation-type deals, or like you say, in-home detention or something.
Where it helps us is for us, because we do a lot of work in these counties, we have a really good understanding of what is going on at the moment with the counties and the way that things are going to be sentenced. I'll give you an example of a judge. Judge thought that he was really giving my particular client a bad sentence for him in the sense of the amount of time he was going to be in custody on a fifth DUI in Adams County recently. And this particular judge gave my client, who was otherwise eligible for probation, and I thought he was probably going to get maybe an extended county court jail sentence, because on the number of, you know, on the felony conviction, they have to give him a certain number of days.
Gotcha.
In a sentence. And so I was arguing, and in this particular case, the guy had actually done a lot of work to help himself work on his addiction. And so he had done a bunch of out-of-patient treatment and had done a bunch of other work to indicate that he probably is a good candidate for a long-term probation sentence. And my view of those individuals is they need help managing their addiction for not a year or two, but more like 4 years, 6 years, so that they get into a practice and a routine that helps them in their life and their lifestyle, so that when something goes bad in their life during that time period, they don't turn to that alcohol or whatever it is that their addiction is,
right,
to kind of deal with it. All right, so the judge in this particular case, so I'm making the argument thinking that this is what my client needs to get through. And the judge said, no, I'm going to put him in the Department of Corrections. And I know that from the Department of Corrections standpoint, he gave him like a two-year Department of Corrections sentence or four-year Department of Corrections sentence. But I knew, because we do a bunch of this work, Department of Corrections right now, for the individuals that are dealing with this sort of crime, they'll send them to Department of Corrections, the DRDC facility, which is their diagnostic center. Right now, because of COVID, they're sending them down to a facility in near Canyon City, making sure that they don't have the virus, and then they're sending them to the facility where to deal with the diagnostics. So it was before this. So they had sent my client to the diagnostic center, and normally it takes them 30 days, but they had gotten him sort of covered because of the PSI and everything else, recognized that he was a good candidate for in-home detention or for a halfway house. They actually put him in a halfway house for 2 weeks. He was back in my office after a two-year Department of Corrections sentence given out by the judge. He was in my office in 2 weeks coming to see me about another matter. So he was still under Department of Corrections watch, and he's still doing the things he needed to do. But there was an example of where a judge didn't really recognize what exactly the sentence was going to be when he sentenced him, thinking he was giving him a really difficult time in custody somewhere, and it ended up being the better sentence. Wow. And those are the sorts of things that we deal with on a regular basis to figure it out. So Jeffco, you know, what we're seeing is, because of what's going on with the jail, a sentence there is different than Arapahoe or Adams, and we have the ability to talk to clients to set their expectations, because the most important thing for a defendant going into custody is having a sense of what's going to happen.
Sure.
It's much like what we're going through right now, right?
No
with
doubt.
The stay-at-home order, is you just don't know how long it's going to be or what it's going to look like. Well, it's the same thing for the defendant. And so that's where we help people get through the process. Mm-hmm. Not saying they didn't do it and they shouldn't be punished, but,
sure,
but making sure that they understand, and then trying to figure out and help them through the process of getting better. Because that's really the criminal process, other than punishing the really bad doers of things that they've done that just aren't able to be rehabilitated, that's a very small percentage of the people. The majority of the people, you hope that they're trying to give, you're giving them tools to figure out how to better themselves.
Right, right. Can inmates even have visitors now, like family members? Because, man, can you imagine what would happen
Correct.
If they start getting
yeah,
it there?
The real problem is, right, if one of the inmates gets the virus, what do they do?
Yeah.
To quarantine them, and then it's just going to go through the jail.
Sure.
And you have, you know, you have a certain percentage of people in the jails that are just like the rest of the population that are susceptible to getting really badly and die from this thing. So yeah, there's no visits.
Wow.
And lawyers, they're not allowing lawyers to go into the jails.
Mm.
And normally, constitutionally, you have the right to do that at any time. I mean, I can go into a jail other than these time periods, just about any time, day or night, and right. see somebody if I want to see them, if they're clients of mine. So it's a different place, but there's also there's also the ability electronically to see these inmates.
Thank goodness for that.
Right. Yeah, and thank goodness that they can see people electronically so that their family and friends don't necessarily have to come to the jail. They can do it remotely. Mm-hmm. And it costs money. There's no question about that. There is some fee to it. But that's, I think, in normal cases, there's still, it's certainly worth not being able to see them at all.
Right, absolutely. You're listening to Legal Talk with Kevin Flesch. Kevin's number, 303-806-8886. It's Flesch & Beck Law, fleschlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, lawfirm.com. So accidents, I mean, they're still happening no matter what because people are still in the roadways. Some people, I'm afraid, might say, well, man, am I hurt bad enough to go get medical treatment during this time? Or I don't even want to go to a medical treatment in case to get something. But probably still should seek medical attention after an accident, right?
Yeah, you definitely want to. You definitely want to document what exactly has taken place with regard to your injuries. Even if it's one of those situations where you're not sure, you still should go get it checked out. Maybe not in an ER facility, but, you know, something else, your private primary care physician if they're available, or at least do something telephonically or by video to talk to the doctor about what exactly you're having so that they can document the fact that you have made an effort and then probably ask you a bunch of questions remotely that will help them understand what exactly is going on with you and then giving you some advice about what you should do. Because the biggest thing in our practice, the first thing that I'm always concerned about for the individuals who get into a car accident is I don't want you to suffer any more than you need to relating to your injuries. And so if that's getting to a chiropractor or a physical therapist or someone else that can help you with the soft tissue injuries, you want to get those taken care of. Obviously, somebody who's broken their arm or their leg or something else, you'll need immediate care, and that's not going to be a hard decision to make. Mm-hmm. But where you're not sure, I had a client recently who wasn't sure what exactly happened, and they went in, and sure enough, they had drops. Something had happened with them at work and dropped something on their foot and had an injury there. They went in, and sure enough, they had broken a couple of toes through that process. There wasn't much they could do about it, but at least they knew what the issue was. It's the same thing in the car accidents. You just want to make sure that you're diligent about documenting what's taken place because maybe it's not anything that you're going to do anything about, but you need to lay that groundwork. And a lot of folks think, oh, well, you know, the medical facilities are closed because of all that's been going on or they're not available. You still are able to call and talk to somebody, a medical professional, and figure out what exactly you can do because most likely there'll still be some ability to have some medical treatment done. And especially where you have the more significant injuries, you know, soft tissue where you don't do anything about them, whiplash, they're really, really hard on folks. And it's something that you want to get taken care of sooner than later because it's going to help you longer term. It's going to be harder to fix if you wait several weeks that you think that you have to wait because of the current situation. You shouldn't do it. You need to get in.
Right. You know, a few weeks ago when all this started up in the mountains in Vail, I believe the story goes something like this, where a couple had the virus. They were told to stay in. They just couldn't stay anymore. They went out on the slopes. Then a lot of people got infected there. And some have said, oh, we can file charges against them. So a lot of people have said this, you know, somebody deliberately, you know, goes into work or, you know, says, hey, I'm trying to infect everybody I can. Is that good for the movies or is that a real life thing?
Yeah, I think it's good for the movies for the most part. I think that if you can prove that the person has the malice or the intent, that they know that they have the virus and they go to places they were specifically trying to infect people, you've got a claim. We've been seeing that a few around the nation where people are going into the stores and coughing on someone and telling them that they have the virus, that sort of thing. You know, that's sort of harassing behavior. Those are things that certainly are criminal offenses that can be charged. You've got to show the intentionality relating to it.
Right.
But the people who are just trying to get by that don't know for sure, you know, I had an employee that their doctor said because her husband probably was infected by the virus, you know, as soon as she was told that, she self-quarantined and did everything. But prior to that, she was at the grocery store and doing other things around the community. You know, she didn't know, and it's not – everybody's finding out later after the fact. All of those people can't be charged with something or can't be sued. I mean, it will be interesting to see how all of the cruise ship sort of quarantines play out. I know that there were lawsuits relating to that, but now that we've been into this a few weeks and we realize the significance of this of what can be happening with regard to...
It's going to be a tough case.
I think it is. I think, I think, you know, when we get back to the jury trials in the community and what the community is feeling about certain things. I think initially when people, I think we all were not as... We just didn't understand the significance of this virus and what how it could affect the world. Initially, you're like, boy, that seems really extreme for them to keep all of those people on those cruise ships for weeks at a time, and I hate to be there and that sort of thing. But now, once we've been living it for this period of time, you can understand why they did it. And, yeah, I think it would be really hard. And initially, I think they probably had some validity, but now that we've gotten through it and with hindsight, I think it's going to be really hard cases to prove down the road that you should be entitled to anything. Because I think they're doing what they needed to do. Because the same argument could be made for all of the governors and all of the other officials. I don't think that's where we're at. I think once we get through this and we get 6 months past it, it's going to be one of those really interesting markers, much like the Spanish flu in 1918, and what happened there, and how the U.S. government and the people dealt with it then. Up to this point, I didn't have any historical perspective about that or anything else, but it's been...
Didn't even really care about me,
right?
Whatever,
I had no idea.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting to go back and read, I think, and hear what people did for that particular virus to combat it. And history is always helpful in trying to not make mistakes that you made in the past. And so I think my guess is that when we come out of this, there'll certainly be things that we'll realize that we could have done better or differently, and probably hopefully learn something from it in the future. But, you know, 100 years, that's 10 generations ago, you know, and we probably should have done a better job of recognizing that and realizing what was going on when this first started. But we'll just have to wait and see.
Sure.
And it's the same thing with the injury cases. That's why it's important at the end of, you know, where you're coming up on that three-year statute of limitations, and you're like, oh, I'm still hurting from this accident, but I really didn't get any treatment until a year after the accident, and do I have a claim? It's difficult to recreate that evidence. Mm-hmm. So the most important thing is to get it documented as early on as possible, because that's going to help you legitimize your injuries down the road, because there's always going to be the cynic in the insurance company and their adjuster that's going to say, oh, is it really related? And do you really need to have that? It'll be interesting to see as well when we are making claims a year from now for individuals that have injuries now, and whether or not I'm going to get a discount relating to lost wages. Well, nobody was working during that time period, or proved that they were in a critical employment situation where they could have worked after an accident. So all of those issues are going to come up again and see how that affects us down the road.
All right. Are you finding now, in looking at people's policies when they come in from an accident, that more people, you know, are getting better at this, you know, uninsured motorist and med pay and all that? Or is that still an area people need education in?
It's still an area that people need to be educated in. So prior to all of this virus stuff coming up, and the economy was sort of humming along, and people were actually in pretty good shape financially, a lot of people were working on those sort of aspects of their insurance and making sure that they had more insurance to cover themselves. Now with the downturn and what I think is going to be 6 months or a year of where people are going to be struggling again, we're going to see it again, where people, that's something that they're going to stop paying.
Either stop paying and not have insurance,
correct,
or call, hey, what can I do to discount my policy more?
I just want a liability policy. I don't want anything else. And the thing that I can tell people is this is exactly the time when you're going to want to make sure that you have underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage, because that insurance is for you, and it's for you when the person that hits you hasn't kept up their policy or doesn't have enough adequate insurance, when they really hurt you and you're going to the emergency room and you've got all these other medical bills and all these lost wages, and they only have the minimum policy because that's what they thought they could afford at the time, and they don't have any assets. And so you'll want to make sure that you review your policy with an insurance agent, not online. You want to talk to a human being about what it is exactly that's your situation, figure out what you can budget for on a monthly basis, and get as much insurance that's covering you for your assets. If you have a significant amount of assets, you want to have a significant amount of injuries, or insurance for someone in the event that you cause them injury, and then the underinsured, uninsured motorist limits so that you have insurance for yourself. Right. When that uninsured person hits you, or the person that has a $25,000 limits hit you, and you're out for months at a time.
Kevin Flesh is with us. You're listening to Legal Talk. Kevin's number, 303-806-8886. Again, as he mentioned in this segment, he is able to help you even today, through all this. They do a lot of things through video conferencing. Kevin will figure it out. So if you've got any kind of legal need, give him a call, 303-806-8886. Now, with things that are, you know, where you're supposed, you maybe you get arrested, you're supposed to get a court date within a certain amount of time, and red flag bill comes to mind, yeah. You know, now. Or, you know, if people get a restraining order, I mean, how soon is that person's, but are all these things just going to get pushed back now?
So the red flag laws and the restraining order issues are still being dealt with on a regular basis with the courts. It may be by phone, it may be by video conferencing. They're trying to minimize the amount of personal involvement with the court staff and the judges until about middle of May is my guess, is when that'll start really being ramped up again. But they still are having court relating to those things. So what I can tell people is if you get served with a temporary restraining order, personally served with it, and it shows a date that's, you know, 7 or 10 days out, that's a court date you've got to take seriously. Because if you don't show up and the other party does, they'll get a default against you, and then you have this permanent restraining on your history. And those are really hard to unwind. Yep. You've got to wait years to do it, and then you have to go through a process of providing criminal history and background, and then petitioning the court and having a significant hearing. And it affects a lot of different parts of your life.
I was going to say, a lot of people, I think, when they think of restraining order, oh, I just can't go around that person, no big deal. I don't want to be around them anyway. But I'm telling you, there's a lot of fingers to that, so to speak, in there.
It's a foundational order that gives people the right then to start talking about red flag issues. You're going to lose your ability to carry. You're going to lose your ability to have a weapon, even if it's not relating to a domestic violence situation, potentially. Gotcha. So it's something that people need to really take seriously. And we are getting calls about those. I'm more than happy to help you through that process. It's a little complicated, but it's still going on, and there are significant issues. And it's really a fast turnaround in most circumstances. But now with the social distancing, it's even more critical that you get on it right away.
Right. You know, last week I saw an article where there were over 25,000 CBI checks in Colorado in that 1 week compared to the week ago. That week last year, there was a little over 7,000. So gun sales...
through the roof.
Ammo sales are through the roof. And most of the guys I'm talking to at the counters, they're saying a lot of these people are first-time gun buyers. They can just tell by the questions they're asking, you know. So I don't know. What do you think is driving all that? You think it's just the fear of this government?
I think so. I think it's the same thing. I think, you know, you hear concern from our politicians. You hear that the National Guard is being sent out to the states, and then people can't buy toilet paper. I mean, it's all of that sort of trying to control your lives. And there's one way to protect yourself in your home is making sure that you have a gun and the ability. And then obviously the biggest thing with buying a weapon for the first time purchaser is that they've got to know how to use it and they've got to practice. And so,
and right now, see, like you can't do classes, so just be careful.
Yeah, you really got to be careful and really got to understand what exactly is going on. Because the flip side of that is you don't want to get yourself into a situation where you really hurt somebody with a weapon and it turns out that you shouldn't have been using deadly force.
Yeah.
Because that's criminally, it's a problem. Civilly, it's a problem as well. People will be able to make claims, and it's just not a place you want to be. So like we've talked in the past about owning a weapon, you want the biggest, it's easy to get one. The biggest and most important part of it is that you know how to use it and that you practice with it on a regular basis.
Yep. 30 seconds left, but I'm just telling you, folks, be aware of your surroundings. I had a friend of mine went to a grocery store the other day, and they were actually sitting in the car waiting on her. She was sitting in her car waiting on her husband. Lady comes out with her grocery cart full of bags, had her purse sitting on where the women usually put it, right in that little carrier right in front of them. Guy ran by,
grabbed the
snatched that purse, and was gone.
Yeah.
Man. So I think in these tight times, we're going to see a lot more.
Yes, we are.
Criminal activity.
Yep. Just be aware, understand your surroundings, make sure that you're safe, and make sure that you understand that you're responsible for what takes place in, around yourself. Because with where we're at, limited resources for police and fire, too.
Sure. Kevin, always great information. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Kevin Flesh, Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. Check out his website, fleshlawfirm.com. Thanks for being with us.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.